"Let me just run this by my lawyer" is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan, we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
We have sad news to report. No money today. The KFI cash refill contest has taken a holiday, just like a lot of other people. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, no? Anyway. It'll be back tomorrow.
You know what? Every day here looks like a federal holiday, so it's hard for me to tell.
And the same with traffic today for you? Or notice anything lighter or different?
No, exactly the same.
Oh, traffic was so light for me coming in this morning, though. It was such a blessing.
No, see?
I didn't get that.
She drives at an earlier hour than you, so. Oh, everybody's running around my neighborhood. There's just people everywhere with nothing to do.
You know.
They drop a day off like this after you've been off for all the holidays. People are just like, what are we going to do? Let's go to the beach and stand around.
Yeah, it's a standing around day. Although I heard today that unlike other federal holidays, this is an official federal day of service. People are supposed to be committing acts of community service in memory of Dr. King. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. What did you do?
Nothing.
Well, you didn't take the day off, though.
That's right.
You take the day off, you go and do service.
Right. So I assume all the people
here. This is your service for the people.
That's right. We are going to be informing and warning people of many
That's right.
Terrible
Getting
things
angry and pointing things out that nobody else points out.
Sure. You know, doing our job for the community. But I know the rest of the people who didn't show up today, they're not doing a day of service. I know that.
Well, we'll begin by telling you something you probably won't hear or read about in too many places. It comes from the state of Wyoming. They have drafted a resolution in the state legislature in Wyoming to ban the sale of new electric cars by 2035. If that sounds like opposite land and that I made a mistake in reading this, I did not. That is the intent behind the resolution, Senate Joint Resolution 4, and it is a response to states that are phasing out petroleum and gasoline-based cars. That's their response.
Now, it's
because Wyoming is a big oil and gas state, they felt the need to defend the industry.
Smart thing to do. It's about the only industry in Wyoming. So, you know, there's only 600,000 some odd people that live there.
Yes.
It's quite empty.
They still get 2 U.S. senators.
They still get 2 U.S. senators, and they're not going to put up with this California crap. You know, it's time Wyoming set the example for the rest of the nation.
We got 2 sources for the story that Ray sent us. One of them is Cowboy State Daily. Do you read that one? CowboyStateDaily.com.
I have a subscription, yes.
Wyoming is the cowboy state, so that's the name of the publication. You do have a subscription? Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Jim Anderson said that it's to push back against bans on new sales of cars with internal combustion engines in states like California and New York. We would be saying, if you don't like our petroleum cars, well, we don't like your electric cars. How about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Cowboy State Daily points out that a 2021 study by the International Energy Agency, which is one of those Paris organizations, calculated that electric vehicles require 6 times more minerals than conventional cars. Minerals such as copper, lithium, nickel, cobalt, graphite, zinc, and rare earths.
Are we going to run out of this stuff if everybody has an electric car?
We here in the United States do not have large deposits of some of these minerals. Mm. We have to buy them from China, and much of this has to be mined in Africa, and the Chinese own most of the cobalt mining operations in Africa, specifically in the Republic of the Congo.
Wow.
And they employ, and I've seen a film done on this, they employ children and African women as slaves. They work in very dangerous conditions. There are a lot of casualties, and they're paid very little. So if you want to talk about one of the centers of modern-day slavery, go to the Chinese cobalt mines in the Congo, and you will see some really hideous, heartbreaking conditions. Of course, none of the progressives here particularly care about that. They just would rather preen about their silly electric vehicle.
Heard a news story this morning. China is selling electric cars like crazy. They are kind of leading the globe in the growth of electric car sales. The U.S. has jumped thanks to the gas prices in the last year, but China's really pushing for this, probably because they understand that there's only so much they can do with all the coal plants and everything else that they've been doing and with oil production. So they're pushing electric, and probably for the reasons you just said. They have control of some of the mines in Africa, and they think they can get some of these elements.
They own the business. And so do you think if there's a shortage, and there already is a shortage of many of these minerals, they can't mine it fast enough, what do you think is going to happen? We're going to get screwed. They own the supply chain. We don't. And it's what's really strange is I don't know why America sat around and let the Chinese gobble up all the cobalt mining in the Congo. I don't understand the competitive...
Particularly in the push in this country to have everybody drive an electric vehicle. Yeah. They got to understand that's a key element. Yeah. Now, the other thing that's important, and it's pointed out in this resolution, we've mentioned this from time to time, but it is going to be a bigger story in the years to come. The difficulty in disposing of the old electric vehicle batteries. From the resolution, the critical minerals used in electric batteries are not easily recyclable or disposable, meaning that municipal landfills in Wyoming and elsewhere will be required to develop practices to dispose of these minerals in a safe and responsible manner. And I think we talked about this a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
This is a big concern because EVs are so new, we're not having a lot of batteries run out yet, but that's going to be the future when the car's battery eventually runs down.
Of course, among the woke progressives, there's no concern about all these batteries. They're worried about plastic straws.
Yes, I would say this is a bigger concern than plastic straws.
Until there's a video of an electric battery stuck up the nose
of a turtle,
of a sea turtle, then they'll get concerned about it.
Now the only weird thing about this, which made me think it was also maybe a joke, but it's a true resolution. They believe it's mostly symbolic, but the co-sponsor is State Senator Brian Boehner. Just thought I'd throw that in. A Republican from Douglas, Wyoming. Mr. Boehner, it's your turn. Now, on the other end of this was Car and Driver. Remember Car and Driver magazine? A lot of people used to get that when I was a kid. I used to see that in the newsstands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They called this bill purely symbolic, purely a stunt. It's a simple little bill, one that presents wildly unbalanced views of the benefits and costs of EVs and wouldn't in the end actually ban EV sales. Not yet, anyway. If adopted, the bill would simply do two things. It would force the legislature to shoot for the goal that the sale of new EVs in the state be phased out by 2035. The bill would also encourage Wyoming's industries and citizens to limit the sale and purchase of new EVs in Wyoming.
This is the mirror of the California bill, because believe me, in 2035, people are still going to be buying gas-powered cars from dealers.
Oh, could you imagine what our electric supply is going to look like in 2035 the way it is now, with these possible blackouts we get every summer?
No,
about just the growth in people trying to use electric over other forms of energy. By 2035, I think you're right. Somebody's going to say, we just can't do this. There's not enough grid. We've got enough grid capacity.
A lot of this stuff that came out of Gavin Newsom's empty head is going to end up being modified. by 2035 because it's simply impossible. Right. And we're only 12 years away. And if you notice, there is no sustained effort to greatly expand our electrical grid or to expand the charging stations. If anything, we're going backwards because in September, if you remember, during the electricity shortage, they told us not to plug in our electric cars between 4 and 9 o'clock.
Yes.
Now, come this September or whenever we get the big heat wave, you're going to hear the same thing. They don't have any concrete plans. They have resolutions. They have paper that they can wave in the air. But really, they don't have, like, actual construction going on anywhere to greatly expand the electrical grid. So,
and one more story along the lines of clean energy. Oh, from our old radio state, New Jersey, actually John's home state. There is a congressman who's pretty worked up because apparently there's a lot of whales washing up on shore, dead.
Yeah, 7 of them.
And he wonders if it's the offshore wind farms that are doing them in. The latest death Thursday was a 25-foot long humpback whale. It remains washed ashore. Oh, John, in Brigantine, just north of Atlantic City.
That's right. That's where we were.
Right. The governor is saying, I will not halt. He's a Democrat. I will not halt for now any offshore wind farms. There's no proof of this yet. We have to determine more specifically what caused the death of these whales, some of which are endangered. But
what does this politician know about the cause of death that leads him to believe it's the wind farm?
I don't know.
Is there something leaking?
Or they get chopped up? Well, I guess that would be obvious.
I don't think the whale can jump that high.
I'm not sure.
Like if birds, those wind farms will kill a lot of birds, that's for sure.
Right.
But how it kills a whale is just not explained.
Is there something?
I don't know.
That it's underwater that could affect the whales if they pass by? We'll look into this story. But for now, it is an unusual number of dead whales washing up off the shores of New Jersey. So they got to figure out what is doing it.
Here's like one possibility. There's a company from Denmark that's building two of the wind projects, and they could be using pulses of low-frequency sound as they explore the ocean floor, because you have to root the windmills in something, some solid ground down below. And they use pulses of low-frequency sound in the same frequency that whales hear and communicate with, and that could harm or disorient the animals.
Oh.
So that's one of the theories.
So they end up with the brain chaos.
Yeah.
And then they just die and kind of float to shore. All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
I like that term, brain chaos.
Speaking of which.
Yeah, exactly.
Look who's here.
Miss Brain Chaos herself.
That's right. Deborah Mark, live in the 24-hour KFI newsroom.
We got a lot to talk about today. Another Riverside County Sheriff's deputy was murdered. This is the second in just over 2 weeks. We're going to have Steve Gregory on after 2 o'clock to try to fill us in with some of the details. But apparently he was answering a call of unknown trouble, which I read was more like domestic disturbance. It's only 4 in the afternoon in Lakeland Village out there in the Inland Empire in Riverside County. And he was shot by a suspect who was eventually shot by police officers and was listed in critical condition. But this deputy was married with 2 and 4-year-old sons and a pregnant widow. Really sad story. He had just transferred from San Diego to be closer to his family, which runs a barbecue restaurant in Murrieta. So we'll get all the details from Steve after the news at 2 o'clock. Now we go to almost, well, not exactly the same place, but we go back to the Inland Empire for one of the oldest stories on the John and Ken Show. For how many years have we covered the guy on death row, Kevin Cooper? Holy mackerel. What was this? A murder was 1983. He was convicted of fatally stabbing 2 children and 2 adults inside a Chino Hills home. If you don't remember this, we've had family members on over the years, but Doug and Peggy Ryan and their 10-year-old daughter, Jessica, were stabbed to death, as well as a boy who was staying over for the night, 11-year-old Christopher Hughes. The Ryan's 8-year-old son, Joshua, survived the attack. Cooper had moved his way up on death row, and he was due to be executed when everything ground to a halt for, well, probably well-known reasons for most listeners now, the whole stand down on executions in the state. But of course, time and time again, we kept hearing, no, this man is likely innocent. Do not execute him. We just believe that because we want to believe that. He got the right people to believe that. Well, that's kind of all it comes down to.
He's been a pet case of the woke progressive movement for decades now.
Decades.
And he was just within weeks of getting executed. I think back in 2005. When they blocked executions because they were fighting over how to kill people.
And yeah, I know.
What's happened is there was this idiot columnist for the New York Times.
Yeah, the Times picked up his case a while back. Yeah. Oh, it says 2021.
Even before that. And
2018. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy had this obsession with getting Kevin Cooper off. And I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, I have it for you here. Yeah, Let me just scroll.
His name, so I can howl when I hear his name again.
Nicholas Kristof.
Nicholas Kristof. Yeah, yeah. He's an old line wokester.
It says, was Kevin Cooper framed for murder?
Yeah. So he started this up, and Newsom read this. Probably somebody read it to Newsom. And he decided that, based on the evidence in the Nicholas Kristof column, I'm not going to execute him. And they put the whole thing on suspension. Now, I just want to tell you how stupid Kristof is. Kristof quit his job as a New York Times columnist, which is, in journalism, that's one of the top perches that writers aspire to. He quit it because he was going to run, I think, for governor in Oregon.
He was, yes.
And he got to Oregon after quitting and applied and found out he wasn't eligible because he hadn't lived in Oregon.
Not long enough, I think, was the answer.
Not long enough, right. So he didn't check.
How's that for research?
Exactly. That's my whole point. The guy was dumb enough to quit his job at the New York Times and move cross country to run for governor and found out he couldn't because he hadn't lived there long enough. So you're not dealing with the sharpest knife in the drawer there.
Well, guess what? The governor, after all the hoopla you talked about, appointed a special counsel. Woo! An outside independent counsel to look into the Kevin Cooper case. And the report reads, the evidence of Cooper's guilt is extensive and conclusive. Blamp, 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 blamp.
Because there was DNA.
Because he is the killer.
Because
there was all sorts of DNA in the house from him.
Kevin Cooper's DNA was at the scene. Just like
there
Brian
wasn't
Coburn.
Any DNA evidence, the report said, that points to any other person as the culprit. 243-page report.
And
genetic testing found his DNA inside the home on cigarette butts recovered from a station wagon stolen from the family's home after the killings.
Right. So it's case closed.
Honestly.
And
now Kim Kardashian's involved, too.
Well, right, because she's on the same intellectual level as Gavin Newsom.
And Nicholas Kristof.
Okay? The three of these geniuses, you could add up their three IQs together and you wouldn't get to room temperature. And this is the one, these are the people driving this news story. And we had, now we wasted several more years with an outside independent investigation. His DNA is there, like Brian Koberger's DNA is at the crime scene up in Idaho. Like OJ's DNA was at the crime scene. How come nobody says Brian Koberg is being framed because of his race?
That hasn't come up yet.
Yeah, no, but that's what they were saying about Kevin Cooper. Well, he was framed by police because of his race.
Well,
it's like, no, he actually killed the family.
Because it was a party house, Brian Koberger might be able to explain away his DNA at that house, but Cooper.
No.
By the way, didn't he escape from jail or something?
He escaped from a prison that wasn't far from the house.
House, right.
He got out of the prison, and then he broke in and he killed this family.
And he stole their car.
Right.
Yet he still lives, and all these people have been dead since like 1983. Unbelievable story. One of the things they latched onto, the 8-year-old boy I mentioned that survived, was a little confused when he started to talk about what he saw as the possible suspects. First, he was identifying some Latino men. He was just all over the place. His name is Joshua. He's only 8.
Wasn't he his throat cut?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
right, yes.
Stop.
Yeah, it's a major medical trauma he suffered, and it took a while for him to come back from those injuries.
I have met some of these Innocence Project types, right? And they want to get people off death row or out of prison entirely. They've always got weird little dangling threads of a case that they obsess on. And they're very clever and passionate about turning these little tiny nuggets into these huge mountains of doubt. And it's all performance. It's all theater. It's all how they project and how they demonstrate. And then, you know, when you actually, because I've talked to a couple of these people, when you talk to them and start peppering them with questions, because they're really good with, when they're at a microphone or at a podium and nobody challenges them, you know, like Newsom, right? But if you actually challenge them over the details, you get a lot of that, you know, because none of their stuff actually flesh, they can't really flesh out their arguments. Things fall apart quickly. You have to have an emotional presentation and use racism to scare people and manipulate them so everyone's afraid to contest it. It's like, well, I don't think this is really a right analysis, but I don't want to be accused of racism.
There is no reasonable possibility that more investigation beyond what has already been conducted in this matter could affect the conclusion that evidence of Cooper's guilt is conclusive, the report said. So that should be the end of that. Of course, we don't execute anybody anyway, but no. I didn't want this to end up being a free man. That would be wrong.
No. He's 65. The very least, he should rot in jail till he dies.
You don't think they'll give him old person's parole release?
not as long as Newsom's running for president.
All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640 live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
He doesn't want to be Michael Dukakis.
All right, we'll be joined by Steve Gregory from KFI News concerning the shooting death of another Riverside County Sheriff's deputy. This happened Friday afternoon. It's the second in just a couple of weeks. He'll give us all the details, and maybe we'll learn something about the suspect that might lead us back to our fading criminal justice system, all about reform, right? Anyway, we'll get into that after 2 o'clock. In case you don't know, the rain stopped, and from what I can see in the 10-day forecast, outside of Thursday, which has a bit of a chance, not much happening for the next 10 days. So we may be into a calmer period. Downtown Los Angeles got 1.82 inches of rain yesterday, the Sunday drenching, which finally moved out late yesterday. The old record was 1.56 inches set in 1978. LAX, 1.5 inches. The old record was 1.51. This was 1.53, also set in 1978. You can see the trend here. That apparently is a big storm year because the Long Beach Airport also broke a record set in 1978. And the airport at Camarillo broke a record set in 1990 by getting 1.43 inches of rain, which I was waiting for this story. And it finally came out from the Washington Post. In California, drought turns to floods. Forecasters didn't see it coming. Oh, isn't that sad? Coming into this winter, California was mired in a 3-year drought, with forecasts offering little hope of relief anytime soon. Fast forward to today, the state is waterlogged with as much as 10 to 20 inches of rain and up to 200 plus inches of snow that have fallen in some locations in just the past 3 weeks. Now, of course, they want to point out the drought isn't over. Right? There's still some areas of the state that have some levels of drought. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Climate Prediction Center. Do you go there, John, for your forecast?
No.
The CPC issues seasonal forecasts of precipitation and temperature for 1 to 13 months into the future. Their initial outlook for this winter, issued on October 20th, favored below normal precipitation in SoCal.
I think it looks like in Washington, they're going to go into a round of budget cutting.
Yes.
I think the first thing they ought to cut is the Climate Prediction Center. Just close it down, move out all the desks and the computers, give these guys mops and brooms, because this is a complete waste of time.
Here's a number for you. Since late December, 24 trillion gallons of water have fallen in California. Mm-hmm. 24 trillion.
And most of it went into the ocean.
A lot of it got washed away. Right, it was a separate story, but brings us back to the old Delta smelt. We'll get to that in a moment.
Here's the thing, and this is the truth, and people don't like... We tell ourselves a lot of myths. It just seems to be human nature. Here's a myth. We think we're so technologically advanced that we can predict the future in everything. Well, half the media is about predictions. And we're also have such a belief in technology and in ourselves that we think we can outwit nature, that we know what's coming with it. It's impossible. Nature works on its own mysterious system, and we can document the cycles after the fact, but you cannot predict the cycles. They never have. And they may never do that, not in our lifetimes.
They updated the forecast in November, November 17th to be exact. What do you know? It still called for a pretty good chance of below normal precipitation in the southern half of California. The northern half, they thought, yeah, they might be at or maybe slightly above normal. Again, dead wrong, November 17th. What I enjoyed in the story, though, and of course it goes on to talk about, they thought that La Nina was going to dominate. La Nina conditions are generally characterized or associated with below normal precipitation in central and southern California. It had been 3 years in a row of La Nina. They thought, why not? Another year of La Nina. We're not seeing anything in our wise predicting model.
Yeah, as we've told you several times, they had a 91% probability that this was going to be a drier than normal winter. 91%. So you can't get much more wrong than that unless you're predicting Hillary Clinton becoming president. So just think about this. It's just a few months away, and they're at 91%. Is there any point that they should be doing the job they're doing? Or can't we just write it off and say, you know what? This is a failed experiment. You can't predict the future. The LA Times actually had a helpful graphic the other day, which was rare. And what they showed is the jet stream, which is the powerful wind currents high above us, they drive the storms. And it's right now, for the last month, it's been west to east, directly into California. So the storms get caught up in the jet stream, and they're shot to the California coast. And it's been that way for quite a while. Now, in past years, the jet stream has bent sharply to the north, let's say towards Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a big hump, then it would come down into the middle of the country. So there was this sharp hump. It would go up, over, and down. And there would be a big high-pressure system filled with hot air, or much warmer air than what you were getting up north. And it would block the rain from coming here. There was a big block sitting over the mountain states.
I remember reading that. During the drought, they kept running that story that these storms are not getting down here because there's a block in the middle of the state, which prevents them from getting to Southern California. And who knows how long that's going to last.
Right.
And what if it lasts for decades more?
That's right. So it's sitting there for 3 years. And so the storms would come and ram into this block and kind of bounce up and go up and over the West Coast and then land somewhere in the Midwest and bring them a lot of snow. Until?
Until what, Miralax?
Until
opened up the blockage?
That's right. I don't know. Some kind of atmospheric enema occurred. And the atmospheric river began to flow.
And the gates are wide open. Now, here's a funny one. Now fast forward to December 19th. The prediction center suddenly said, the next 8 to 14 days, yes, 33 to 70% chance of above normal precipitation across all of California.
Wait.
Now, by December 19th, yeah.
33 to 70?
33 to 70 chance, yes.
33 to 70?
Yes.
Well, talk about being on both
covering
sides
your
of
bets,
the issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
That averages,
one-third to two-thirds chance,
which
right.
averages out to a 50-50, which means, hey, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't.
Oh, on December 31st, they very wisely said our monthly precipitation outlook suggests a wet weather will continue through January. This was on New Year's Eve.
By then.
I think we all knew that.
By then, the jet stream had settled in, and you had all these storms forming. Because it takes a number of days just to get to the coast.
The next chapter of the Washington Post story is you can't rely on long-range forecasts. Well, yeah, there we go.
But the ones...
And how many years have we been telling you that?
But the ones that tell you the temperature in 100 years?
Those
are a lock.
Just remember this, John. The wets are getting wetter.
You know what? They're not. The wets are the same as the wets from 20 years ago and 50 years ago and 100 years ago. You could look it up. I'm telling you, go to this website, LAAlmanac.com, LA Almanac, and you could see the year-by-year precipitation numbers. And the dry years are about as dry as they always are. The wet years are about as wet. And that's just the way the California climate is, period.
All right, when we come back, as John hinted at, 94% of the water that has flowed since New Year's Eve through the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta has continued straight to the Pacific Ocean. 94% instead of being captured. We'll tell you why. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
We're on from 1 till 4 every day now, 1 till 4. And if you missed the show, you can get the podcast at the iHeartRadio app or the John and Ken or the KFI website. It's called John and Ken On Demand.
It's a good name for it.
Yes.
Steve Gregory will be by after 2 o'clock. We have a second Riverside County Sheriff's deputy be fatally shot on duty. Deputy Isaiah Cordero was fatally shot during that traffic stop in Harupa Valley on December 29th by a piece of crap that already had a 3 strikes conviction, should not have been free. Now we're going to learn what happened Friday afternoon out in the Inland Empire to another sheriff's deputy who was answering a call of some kind of disturbance at a home in a residential area called Lakeland Village. So that'll come up after the news at 2 o'clock on the John and Ken Show. Well, we're talking about all the water and all the water we can't have. Here's a story that brings us also back on the John and Ken Show to the 2-inch-long Delta smelt, or the Chinook salmon. They're both two reasons why we can't have a lot of this water when it rains very heavily. In the 1950s, the federal government built big pumps near Tracy, up in Northern California, to send water south to farmers and cities. It was called the Central Valley Project. In the 1960s, former California Governor Pat Brown built even bigger pumps 2 miles west near Byron that pumps Delta water into the State Water Project, which serves 27 million people. But the pumps are enormous. And over time, they have disrupted fish and wildlife in the Delta, including the smelt and the salmon, sometimes grinding them up. Other times, removing half of the Delta's fresh water. So in a series of regulations over the years, because of protections for these two species mostly, a lot of the water, and here's the statistic, 94% of the water that has flowed since New Year's Eve through the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta has continued straight to the Pacific Ocean.
And because of that, some of the reservoirs that get their water from the Delta have not filled up very much. For example, the Los Vaqueros Reservoir has gone only from 48% to 50%.
And the San Luis Reservoir has gone from 34% full on January 1 to 42% on Thursday. You consider what's happened the last 2 weeks, that's remarkably little.
So we flushed all this water out into the Pacific Ocean just to spare the Delta smelt. You know how many Delta smelt they found?
Five.
So it seems that as far as the Delta smelt is concerned, what's done is done. There's no reason to flush 94% of the water into the ocean, and then you go and you do the happy dance. It's like, hey, we found 5 Delta smelt. It's like, all right, well, that species is gone. So it's over.
And they don't think so. They want to bring it back.
Well, they're wrong. And they're crazy.
And they want to deny you water.
Look, you're dealing with fanatics here, and fanatics are impossible to talk to. But the information has to go out to all the normal people that there is no reason for a water shortage. Our water shortage is 100% caused by the incompetent bumblers in government who are terrified of environmental activists. They're silly, cowardly people, and they fold every time an activist complains. And yeah, what we need is we need laws and regulations to counteract what we've been doing and get that water to us.
The rule is called first flush. It requires that the pumps be ratcheted down after the first big rain every winter so that the migrating smelt can move westward away from the pumps. It was actually included in the Trump administration's Delta permits in 2019. And in the Newsom administration state rules in 2020.
The Delta smelt is an ugly little flimsy fish.
Yeah, there's a picture of it. It's very silvery.
Let me tell you what these activists do. And what they do is they emotionally manipulate. That's the key to everything. There's a guy named Doug Obege here. He's an attorney with the National Defense, the National Resource Defense Council in San Francisco. And this is what Obege says. The notion that we should just let some species go extinct because they get in the way of corporate agribusiness profits. He's talking about the farms. I don't think that's what Californians want. Now, that's a clever formation there.
No, it is.
Corporate agribusiness profits, actually, that's the food we eat. And, of course, there's a farming industry, and, of course, they're going to make profits. Otherwise, they won't grow the food, and then we don't eat it. But you see how he frames it? Oh, yeah, I hate big business. I hate corporate agribusiness. I hate profits, right? It stirs up the emotion of woke people. Second line here. No one should have the right to kill the last Delta smelt, the last Chinook salmon, or the last bald eagle.
Oh, he threw in the eagle.
That's right.
What do they have to do with the water flow?
Nothing. Because people don't know and don't care about the Delta smelt.
I saw bald eagles in Alaska. They're beautiful. Oh, but he got me.
They fly high up in the air, though. They're not going to get caught in a water
They're not going to get flushed by the pumps.
But you see what he does? It makes you go, oh, I love bald eagles.
Yeah, he knew the Delta smelt doesn't make a pretty thing to save, right? So he threw in the bald eagle.
If you saw a Delta smelt, you'd squish it with your foot.
All right, coming up next, Steve Gregory to talk about this horrific story. Another Riverside County Sheriff's deputy has been murdered while on duty. This happened Friday afternoon. Johnny Ken Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
And Deborah Mark live in the 24-hour KFI newsroom.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's #1 podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.